Welcome to season 3 of the Fit Farming Food Mom podcast. I am Connie Nightingale, a former bodybuilder, certified personal trainer and nutritionist with an extreme passion for functional health and fitness. There is a huge problem these days with the standard health narrative. The current allopathic medicine, fitness theories, and nutrition guidelines are completely missing the mark. Through this podcast, I have been able to get uncensored, unfiltered knowledge out to the masses to help anyone. No matter if you're an average Joe or an elite athlete, I want to provide you with valuable knowledge to help you achieve your health and fitness goals. Remember, the best way to support this podcast is leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes and sharing with your friends and family or tagging me in your stories or posts on social media. Let's get this health movement out to others. Thank you so much again for joining me. Now let's get to the show. Welcome back, guys, to another episode. Today, I am so excited because guess what? I have one of my favorite all-time podcast guests, Brad Kearns, coming on today to talk about morning routines. He's gotten very big into morning routines. I guess I shouldn't say he's gotten. He's always been huge into them, but he now has a full course that you can go through to help you establish a quality morning routine, why they are so important, and what they can look like. And this is a great episode. Brad is one of my favorite vibrant speakers. He has so many things to say that completely resonate with me. He was a pro athlete for most of his life and is still a very driven individual today. And so we relate on many levels, and I'm very, very excited to have him returning to the show. Before we get going, I want to remind you that I did do a photo shoot with Steel Body Apparel back in probably December or so, and that's when I discovered I loved their products. What I loved even more about them was the cost. They are extremely affordable. We're talking $30 for a pair of pants that are Lululemon quality, and their camo joggers are my absolute favorite, along with their crisscross bras. They show off my shoulders. They look great. I am definitely sold. So, anyway, if you would like, you can hit up my link in my bio on my Instagram at Connie Begani, or head on over to steelbody.com and you can get yourself a great discount with Connie10 for the checkout code. Anyway, really excited about their stuff. I share it with everybody because I'm passionate about it. And who doesn't like to help small local businesses? They are local to my town. Great people. I know them personally and have become very close friends with them. So I would like to share their product on my podcast. Get on over there. Shoot me a message if you have questions. I'm happy to tell you what my favorite products are. Steel Body Apparel. All right, Brad Kearns, I am so excited to have you back on the podcast. You're one of my all-time favorite guests. You have the best energy. You have a fantastic podcast yourself. We immediately hit it off when we had you on my podcast. What? It was like 2 years ago. That's a long time. We needed to get you back sooner than that, but here you are, and I'm excited to have you with me today.
Oh my gosh, coming from the energy woman herself, what a compliment. I appreciate that.
Well, it's always fun to have you. I really enjoy everything that you exhibit with all of the things you're trying to do with people. So today you want to talk about morning routines. Now, I know you're a big morning routine guy. I've been following you for years, and I am kind of that way myself. I don't preach it, but I am very ritualistic in the way I do things. And so today you're actually launching a course about it, which is really awesome. And we'll dive into that. But we want to talk all about how establishing morning routines can be beneficial in everybody's lifestyles.
Yeah, good stuff. And what's interesting is, of course, I'm a fitness guy. I live and breathe this stuff. I've been an athlete my whole life. Not everyone is like that. But we all have a chance to start our day doing something that's really powerful and impactful and gets us focused and disciplined that we can leverage into all other areas of life, and also do something for our physical bodies that allows us to energize naturally and kind of, you know, set the tone for an active, healthy day. And despite my huge commitment to fitness, I've never had any consistency in terms of you know, doing the same workout every day. You know, everything was very well thought out. But some days I might be out there for hours, and other days I might be too busy to get a workout just like any other regular person. And what was happening was, when I went to my most impressive, most difficult sprint workout of the week, I would do this great workout. I'd feel great while I was doing it. And then it would really beat me up, because I'm in the older age groups now, and it's just not easy to go and sprint and do high jumping, which are my competitive interests right now. And I didn't really approximate the difficulty that I experienced in those workouts at other workouts. You can't go and sprint 7 days a week to become a good sprinter, right? So I was doing all kinds of other fitness endeavors, but these workouts were really beating me up. So I wanted to figure out a way that I could sprinkle something in on a regular basis that would elevate the fitness platform from where I launched these really challenging workouts. And so I started doing some stretches and some calisthenics and some core work first thing in the morning. And that was 5.5 years ago. And I've done this morning routine every single day. Now, the routine has changed, and I've added and I've made it more difficult because I've gone down this road where it's become a habit. But the key point is that I wake up and I know every single day, the first thing I'm doing is I'm hitting the deck and I'm going through my sequence of exercises. And so what it's done is, you know, it's made me resilient against injuries and breakdown that happen when I go and really do what my competitive aspirations are. But like you teed it up so nicely, for all of us, whatever level we're at, and even if we're not fitness freaks and we just want to be healthy and you know, keep active, doing this the very first thing in the morning, there's a lot of magic to it. The psychologists assert that when we do something that's proactive and for ourselves, we kind of, you know, show that self-respect. And what we also achieve is we are turning the corner away from this horrible modern trend where we immediately reach for the distraction and the instant gratification of a mobile device. There's a recent Adweek survey showing that 84% of Americans reach for their mobile device as their first act upon awakening. And half of them are laying in bed doing it. And the other half, I guess, have to get up and go to the corner and grab the phone. But if we're all doing this, the psychologists assert that this is a serious problem, because once you engage with that instant gratification and that reactive type of brain mode, it's very difficult to extricate from that and go back into this more desirable state of mindfulness and peace of mind in the morning. And we're sitting there on the porch sipping our tea and reflecting on the many areas of gratitude in our life. And then we're going to our to-do list with our high-level thinking, strategic planning. Once you start scrolling your social media feed or hitting your text messages, I think the doctor's name is Nicole Benders-Hadi. She says, once you go into that mode, you'll, quote, never recover. And then all of a sudden, the fires are burning and you're going through your day in a reactive mindset rather than that proactive state. So exercise is sort of an access point to get in the proper mindset. And then, of course, you know, we want to awaken and get energized. And the best way to do that, of course, is physical movement. And it doesn't have to be the crazy routine that I demonstrate that is very fitness oriented. And I'm doing some things that can be pretty challenging. I also have numerous options in this online course that you mentioned, where you can do a yoga sequence in the morning. You can do a mobility skeleton setting sequence just to kind of get your joints and muscles moving and lubricated properly. So whatever it is, the main point is that if you can make this commitment to yourself that I'm going to do something first thing in the morning toward my health, that's when you start, you know, building up the momentum to reach all kinds of other goals that you might have to improve your life and be more focused when you are looking at a screen, or, you know, get in better shape so you can do more aspirations like weekend hikes or whatever's on your bucket list.
So I like this a lot, Brad. And I kind of think back to the beginning of my fitness journey, right? All I started with was a morning routine. And this was like over 6 years ago. I started with 3 sets of 10 squats, 3 sets of 10 push-ups, 3 sets of 10 sit-ups, and like 3 sets of lunges. Every morning, I would wake up a half an hour early and do that. I'd get out of bed and I would do it right on the carpet next to my bed, right? And never in my life at the time did I think it would develop into what it has developed into today. Now, I'm not saying you got to be some crazy fitness junkie like myself. I mean, I'm saying that little tiny habits can grow into other things if you plant that seed. And I was just reflecting on it yesterday. I was in the gym and I really, really love to work out. It's my favorite thing to do. I don't know what's wrong with my head, but I just love to do it. Anyway, I love to see progress. I don't know. There's no place you can go every day and know that you're growing, like know that you are doing better every single time you go. And so for me, I was thinking of all that yesterday and I was like, who would have thought that this little morning routine that I had would grow into this thing that I almost can't live without because I love to go so much.
Wow. That's an amazing story. And I think we can all relate to you dabble in something and then it becomes all consuming. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a key point here is that we want this starting point to be super easy and doable and sustainable. So if you can, listener, if you can make a commitment right now to say, okay, I'm going to give it 5 minutes, that's a really honorable thing. It's not too little. It's fantastic. It's super, but take it seriously, make the commitment, have some stakes and consequences there so that you really do want to adhere to this and make it a habit. And that's when you can kind of open the door to be, well, my 5 minutes is over. Wow, that was fast. Maybe I'll do another set like you added the lunges after you did the pushups. But we don't want to overwhelm ourselves because there's a really common problem where we set goals. We start out with a lot of enthusiasm and motivation. And then those are fragile tools that often wane. Same with willpower to, you know, psych yourself up to do something. And so what we want to do with this morning exercise routine is transition it beyond the need for motivation and willpower and turn it into a habit where it's sort of mindless. And that's why it's so important to do the exact same thing every single day so that you don't have to use creative energy or have outs or negotiation points where usually I go for a 45-minute run, but today I'm going to take a shortcut because so many things are piling up at the office. This is not what we want to do with this particular aspect of your lifestyle. With fitness and workout planning, we can have a whole nother show, right? You can talk about mm-hmm. your tapering phase and your periodization and all that, but this is something that should be doable enough. It's not super physically challenging. I want it to be right in that medium score where it's not too strenuous where one day you're too tired and you have to throw in the towel halfway. So it's right in that sweet spot where you're doing something good for your body. You do the exact same thing. So that's sort of mindless. And over time, when it transitions and moves into that category of habit, it's a wonderful feeling because now I can't imagine starting my day without doing it. I've progressed really carefully and gracefully over time. So like you, mine started with something that was pretty simple. It lasted about 12 minutes. I was doing these core exercises while I was still in bed. That was my first rendition of the routine. And then I realized how much harder it is when you're on the ground rather than sinking into a mattress when you're flipping your legs around. And so it was a very modest start. And then what I would do over time is I would like audition a new exercise to be included in my morning routine. And I'd carefully consider whether the calf raises or the leg circles would be a nice addition. And then I would throw it in the template. And again, the template's the same every single day, but the template can change over time. And so today, my little sequence of exercises lasts for a minimum of 40 minutes, which is a huge commitment to fitness every single day. I'm not asking a lot of people to do that. Maybe 5 years down the road, which is how far I am. I feel comfortable and it's become such an important part of my life that, you know, I relish it. I relish the time, but if it can start at 5 minutes, that's where the magic really occurs. Number one best-selling book the last time I looked on Amazon was Atomic Habits by James Clear. And he brings up these examples of if you're not good at flossing your teeth and that your dentist scolded you again at your last checkup, he says, floss one tooth. Make that your goal and your commitment. And mm-hmm. it's a ridiculous example, but he's dead serious saying this is what our brains need. And we need that sort of success along the way mm-hmm. where we can pat ourselves on the back and say, I knocked out another daily 5 minute routine. Mm-hmm. And boy, you're really doing something when 30 days later, you've got a streak going.
And Brad, I would definitely like to highlight that because you said something back there that really hits home for me. And that's the fact that people think they have to do a ton in order to see results. when, and so that's, I feel like where a lot of people fail when it comes to implementing new habits into their lifestyle is they overdo it. It becomes this, like, if you think of fitness and nutrition, people go on this strict diet and they work out 6 days a week and they hate it and they can't maintain it and they start missing days and it falls apart. Next thing you know, they're done. And so that's one thing that I really love to highlight is you don't have to be crazy to start making changes. The biggest thing is doing something you can be consistent with and that you can consistently do every single day and develop that into a habit.
Yeah, well said. And you know what? I'm still learning along these lines. And with my fitness and my athletic training, I continue to make these mistakes where my workout turned out to be a little bit too difficult for me. And I don't know while I'm doing it, I feel great. I'm pumped up. You know, you're in the gym, the music's cranking and you're going for another set. Or for me, I'm at the track and I'm just, I love being there so much that I push my body really hard. And then I find out over the ensuing 24, 48, 72 hours, like, oh, there goes my left ankle again. I tweaked it on the 17th jump when I should have quit at 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, to regulate that competitive instinct and to focus on consistency and being able to fly under the radar where you're well within your capabilities every time you work out, and rejecting this philosophy that's been pounded into our head about struggling and suffering in the process of fitness. And that's what the industry is all about. That's what is selling things. And, you know, the glorification of, you see the commercial for the indoor cycling program and the woman sweating like crazy and sprinting. And then at the end, she high fives her partner next to her and everybody's got a six pack. And it's like, okay, well, I guess I got to crush myself in order to be a fit person. So if we can kind of say, forget it and go to something more reasonable, that's when we can really feel like what it's like to live as a as an athlete.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a definite, I can totally relate with you in that place, right? Because you and I both have come from major competition backgrounds, you more than me, because you were a pro athlete and you were, that's what you did for a living, right? So there's a whole different level there. But on the other side of it, that mindset, once you flip that mindset on, it can be real hard to turn off and regulate. And even though we learn from our mistakes of overtraining and stuff, we tend to be like, oh, well, I'm not overtraining now. I dialed it back, but our dial it back may not be the dialed back where it needs to actually be.
Yeah. And you know what? We look at these elite athletes, they set a wonderful example, of course, with their performances. It's like, how do they do that? It's amazing. But by and large, they are working well within their capabilities at virtually every workout. There's a great marathoner named Eliud Kipchoge. He's the greatest, probably the greatest endurance athlete of all time on the planet. He's just a sensation. He's won the Olympic gold twice. He's set the world record. He was the guy that ran 159 for the marathon, which is 4 minutes and 34 seconds per mile average pace. And he's just a machine. And he published his training log on the internet for everyone to scrutinize. And the exercise physiologist had a field day breaking down what his pace meant in terms of his maximum capability. And generally, the training schedule is phenomenal, of course, to be the greatest of all time. But for him, he's well within his capability and he's at this nice, safe position where the workouts are very impressive, but he's not falling apart from injuries or burnout or the things that a lot of elite runners, let's say in America and the college system, you know, they're injured 2 out of the 4 years of college. And we see this routinely where people are beating themselves up too much. I'm sure same in the powerlifting community where, you know, the joints are going, the connective tissue is always, you know, a risk factor and the same people aren't competing at the meet every single year. And there's a better way. And back to bring the conversation back to the morning routine, this is sort of this idea of flying under the radar and allowing yourself to build your fitness by sprinkling in little opportunities to improve without that risk of a burnout and breakdown that comes from a really hard workout that was a little bit too hard for you that week or a hard string of workouts. And so this is kind of grease in the groove, Pavel Cicilline calls it, where you're waking up and instead of just reaching for your phone, you're moving those hip flexors, you're exercising the hamstrings, you're reaching for the sky, you're stretching, you're strengthening. And in my course, I have a whole bunch of different workouts. I break down every single thing I do with an incredible explanation. I have yoga moves in there, and this is all just things that work for me. So what I want the participant to do is soak it all in, take in the information, and then custom design some of your favorite exercises. Like you reported your thing that was fun for you. You came up with it somewhere, and those are, you want it to appeal to your own particulars, and especially your fitness goals. And so mine are really calibrated toward, injury prevention and resilience for sprinting, but whatever it is. And if it's just the familiar sun salute sequence of yoga moves, the point is getting out there and doing it. And I also try to combine these circadian benefits. So I'm out in exposure to direct light when I'm doing it. If it's cold out, that's okay. Then I get a cold exposure session along with my exposure to sunlight to set my circadian rhythm along with doing the exercises. So this is the most powerful and natural way to build energy when you wake up. It's better than coffee, literally, because you're leveraging the circadian rhythm hormones. Like when your eyes hit direct light in the morning, melatonin drops, serotonin rises, adenosine is suppressed, which is the thing that caffeine works upon. And that's kind of the sleepiness hormone that builds and builds during the day and makes you feel sleepy at night. But you will block that as soon as you get into the sun. And then when you get the blood flowing and the oxygen delivery and the working muscles, every single time I finish this thing, I feel a lot better than when I started. And believe me, now that I have this streak going, so I have stakes riding on it. I never miss a day. I have little negotiations, like if I do miss some of it, I have to double up the next day. And I've done that a few times, and that gets to be pretty crazy. So I never miss it. And that part, I think, is the point I'm trying to make there is that it's not too daunting that I'm going to fall behind. And even on a day where I'm tired and maybe feel lousy waking up from whatever jet lag or something, when I finish the sequence, I'm alert, I'm energized, and my body's working properly.
So Brad, I guess my question would be, is we have a lot of people here that may be listening and they're like, okay, I've heard about morning routines. I want to get them started, but where do I start? How do I figure out what's right for me? What do you have? How should somebody get started with this?
Well, slowly and gently. So if it means leashing up the dog and walking around the block as your first act upon awakening, that will be a huge boost and an incredible breakthrough in your life. If you are right now one of those 84% of the people, maybe none of your listeners reach for their phone first thing upon awakening, but I think a lot of people do, might be nodding their head. So if you can kind of make that tiny little shift to say, okay, I'm going to get up and for the next week straight or month, I'm going to leash up the dog and walk around the block. And then if you got some rhythm and some momentum going, let's say that you hit the park bench at halfway, and now you're going to go to that bench and the dog's going to wait and you're going to do 20 deep squats and 20 dips and then continue with your walk. And so what I'm describing is a very deliberate and focused sequence where you have an agenda. It's written down, and this is what you're doing. And of course, you might change your mind and do this and add this instead. But I want it to be this regimented act where that's the way that you're going to build it into a habit, where you're going on the same route. Hey, you can go on a different route after you do the first, the first agenda is to walk the dog around the block. And then if you're super badass, maybe you're going to go to the side yard and do a whole bunch of calisthenics. And then you come in the house and it took 15 minutes and that's your routine. But figure out something that works for you and start really slow and then build from there.
Now, would you recommend somebody write this down and maybe have it as part of their schedule every day, whether that be on your bathroom mirror, in a journal, some kind of something, and be like, hey, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I mean, put that out there so that it is actually like set in stone that is part of your workout or your part of your morning ritual.
Oh, sure. And mine's written down and well, now it's filmed and broken down in great detail for all to enjoy. And of course I have a written record of it, but when you're doing the same thing every single day, It's completely memorized, right? I do 40 hamstring kickouts, and that's 40 to the right, 40 to the left. I do 20 frogs in one direction, 20 in the other direction, 20 scissors, 20 bicycles in one, 20 in the other, and boom, boom, boom. I'm going through the whole thing. And so pretty soon you're not going to have to, sweat the details, because you're in the groove until you make a change. But so I made the example of get up, leash the dog, head to the park bench, 20 dips, 20 squats, 20 leg swings on each side, return the dog, and there you go. And then someday, maybe there'll be a stack there, and you'll say, you know what, I want to get out to the backyard and jump into my cold tub. And that becomes my morning template, whatever it is. And so, the sky's the limit. But I think we have to lower those bars when we're sitting here shaking our heads, wishing we were a different person, but we still have the same weaknesses and frailties coming up week after week, month after month. And same thing for like discretionary spending, and your budget's out of control. Okay, well, tighten up one area and, make a commitment to that, where they always make the example of like, if you stop going to Starbucks every day, you're saving $5. And over the course of a year, that's $1,500. You could fly to Hawaii, whatever it is, where you're making these little bite-sized goals and challenges, and then crushing them, and then feeling confident and feeling empowered that you can bring it to a next level.
I love that. So can we talk a little bit about the science behind this and why in the morning it's more beneficial than, say, the afternoon or the evening after dinner?
Well, I'd say it's easier in so many ways, because the day has a way of catching up to you and overwhelming you. And this is especially true in the modern age of hyperconnectivity, constant digital stimulation, potential for distraction, and ways that we can fall off track. And you're talking about the energizing benefits. I'm promoting physical exercise, but really a morning routine could be you get up, you go in the backyard, you write in your gratitude journal, and you meditate for 20 minutes. And you can have a meditating guest on next week that's going to argue that this is the very best thing you can do for your life every morning, which is great. And I totally appreciate, the preferences and different areas that people can take it. For us here, I'm touting the benefits of physical movement, because for most of us, we end up getting dragged into prolonged periods of stillness every single day, which is, by many experts' assertion, perhaps the number one health problem, besides eating shit food, which go hand in hand with sitting around too much and having, research shows that in as little as 20 minutes of stillness, you have a noticeable decline in glucose tolerance. In other words, you start becoming deficient in fat burning, your cognitive function declines just because you're sitting. And the human is meant to move throughout the day at regular intervals. So you have to make that commitment as you go through the day to take a 2-minute break here, a 1-minute break there, get up and do some stretches if you're at your desk for, a half an hour or an hour straight. And those will make you more productive, better metabolically, because the act of stillness and prolonged periods of stillness also promotes systemic inflammation. This is from Dr. Herman Ponser's book, Burn, in his study of the Hadza, the hunter-gatherers in Tanzania, modern-day hunter-gatherers who have an incredibly active lifestyle, and then contrasting studies with sedentary populations, modern citizens. And for some reason, it's not highly completely understood by scientists, sitting promotes systemic inflammation, which astute listeners know is believed to be the root cause of virtually all disease, this chronic inflammation in the body. And it comes from all the different directions: eating poorly, sleeping poorly, inefficient exercise, and prolonged stillness. So that's where you're on this scoreboard of your desperate agenda to move more every day. And very first thing in the morning, you start with movement, then you're setting the tone, and you're already in the high category. And then all you have to do is piggyback on that with these 1-minute breaks and 2-minute breaks here and there. And ideally, if you have fitness goals, of course, you're going to do a proper workout. So I do want to distinguish between the morning exercise routine and a proper workout or fitness experience, because if you're calling it a workout, it might be too difficult and maybe we're not built to quote unquote work out for 7 days a week, right? So this is going to be in a different category of an energizing morning ritual or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm excited to hear this part because that was the part where I was thinking, okay, let's not turn it into something too much that where it's overwhelming. And then also overwhelming, we go from that more parasympathetic goal to then moving into a sympathetic goal because we are now challenging our body every day, maybe a little more than we should be.
Yeah, good point. And so I shared that, you know, it started out really modest 12-minute session where most of it was in bed and too easy. And now it's progressed to this 40-minute sequence that I show on the course. And some of the stuff is pretty difficult, but it's not difficult for me because I do it every single day. And so that's the funny part. Like I took my very, very fit friend through my routine. One of the first times I've done it, you know, in person with someone else. And he was bombing out halfway through. His stomach was burning. He's like, man, this is crazy. I'm like, what are you talking about? This is nothing. We're not even at the hard stuff yet. And not to, you know, I'm not trying to boast, but it's like, I'm good at my own personal morning routine such that it's not a big dent in my energy expenditure, pie slices for the day. And so get good at something. The great high jumper, Stefan Holm from Sweden, the guy who's jumped further over his head than any human ever. He's 5'10" and his best high jump is 7'10". He won the gold medal in 2004. He talks about how the athletes learn all these different drills and skills and things that you can do at practice. He goes, pick your five favorite and get really, really good at them. Master five instead of rotating in 15 or 20. And you hear this talk in the fitness scene about you need to confuse your muscles. You need to switch it up all the time. Otherwise, your body's going to get used to it. I'm like, you know what? Jack LaLanne did 1,000 sit-ups and 1,000 push-ups every morning, every day for his whole life. You know, one of the greatest fitness legends of all time. I don't think that was a problem that he was doing the same thing and that his body got used to doing 1,000 sit-ups every day. So I am happy to do my exact same routine every single day. And if my body gets used to it, I think that's wonderful because now I'm sitting on this higher platform where I can knock this thing out and, you know, live to tell about it. And oftentimes I'll transition, like this morning, I did it. I got right up off the mat after my last move in the order and went over to the running track to do a proper track workout. So talk about a perfect warm-up for a true fitness training session. You know, this is it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I personally used to always be one of those 4 a.m. gym goers. That was my morning routine, right? For 6 years, that's all I did. And then 6 months ago, I switched to 11 a.m., which is really weird, right? But there's a couple reasons for that. Training super heavy right now, I need more sleep. And so guess what? Sleep is the what needs to happen. Second of all, I had more nutrients in my system to make my workouts more efficient at 11 a.m. than I did at 4 a.m. And then also I predominantly work at a desk now, which is a far change from how my life used to be. And I need to get up and get moving in the middle of the day rather than just sitting stagnant. So it just happened to work out perfectly that I have now, it seems inconvenient, but it's actually really optimal for my training schedule right now to work out in the middle of the day. So it was funny how my morning routines completely changed when that happened from a 6-year balance. And so refinding how I like to go about doing things in the morning. And for me, walking, first thing I do, I know this is funny, but I go out on my porch with a cup of coffee and just sit out in the sun and just hang out until my coffee is done, right? And it's not anything that's like exercise or movement of any kind, which is probably great for me because I exercise a lot anyways, but then a walk. So literally just walk to the stoplight and back. It's like a quarter mile. It's not anything, but just going for a walk and getting that fresh air and getting into a parasympathetic state where you're just able to focus on the things that you need to focus on for the day and not, you don't have this bombardment of things going on is so important for your mornings.
Right. And back to the research, we know that our brains are in the optimal peak performance, high level thinking, strategic reasoning state in the morning, because they've been cleansed and rested overnight. And so there might be some individuality here and personal preference, but morning is generally a good time to be productive in all kinds of ways. And then generally, when we accumulate hours of, you know, high performance and high cognitive demand, and perhaps high physical demand, we need to, you know, adjust in the afternoon and perhaps switch over to less demanding cognitive tasks if we're a knowledge worker sitting at the screen all day. And these are, you know, widely regarded and applicable to almost everyone. And same for, I think, getting some morning exercise in. It's not the optimal time to perform athletically or to perform magnificent fitness feats because your circadian rhythm sets you up for, in many ways, you know, better muscle performance, better central nervous system signaling to the muscles to perform explosive work at different times. I've read some research that 2:30 to 4:30 p.m. is the best time for endurance and for strength, and 4:30 to 5:30, you know, there's all kinds of fun research where you can, people are trying to pinpoint the optimal time when your muscles are most flexible and loose. And so again, that's another point where we want to put this in a different category than some badass 4 a.m. morning workout, because that's not going to fly for many people. So whoever you are, whatever time you wake up, whatever things you're facing in your day, if you can, again, you know, access this portal to a better life and dictate, I mean, allocate the first 5 minutes to do something physical and get the blood flowing and the oxygen moving. And you can add, you know, breathing exercises, which become so popular now. And I'm a big fan of the content out there and the best-selling books like Oxygen Advantage and Breath by James Nestor, Oxygen Advantage by Patrick McEwen. Brian McKenzie's doing some great work in this area at his Shift Adapt program. So generally, as I talked about, getting outside and stacking cold exposure, light exposure, physical exercise, and I'm also doing the nasal diaphragmatic breathing. So I'm trying to minimize my breathing as I go through the sequence of exercises. So all kinds of good things are happening. Mm-hmm. And that's why when I get up off the mat after 40 minutes, I feel fantastic. And I'm sure you have a lot of podcast guests pitching whatever their diet, their exercise, and they feel fantastic. And people are listening going, all right, whatever, dude. But I have to say, I don't feel fantastic when I wake up. I'm still solving problems and figuring out what's the best training patterns for me and dealing with assorted, you know, real life stressors by real people, right? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I'm kind of dragged ass, just like all of us can complain about. I'm 57 years old. I'm still trying to do these crazy workouts. It's kind of frustrating that I can't recover as fast as I did when I was 27. Mm-hmm. But I'm just pointing this picture that every single time I finish, I feel way better than when I started. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I start feeling like crap because I'm human.
I really want to highlight that too, because people tend to look at things that they see or hear on podcasts or social media or whatever it may be. They're like, oh, ha ha. Yeah. Well, you don't have to deal with this, or, oh, ha ha. Yeah. Well, you don't have to deal with that. And I find that people don't realize we're all dealing with all sorts of things, right? We all have maybe different levels of things, and what might be hard for someone may not be for another. I mean, you never know somebody's situation, but things are not ideal in everybody's life. So just because that person looks like things are ideal, and so they're like, yeah, I do a morning routine, it may not be that way. And I, like you, sometimes I wake up in the morning and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, like I've got so much stuff to do. You know, maybe I've been working 100 hours a week. That's been a common thing these days. Like, and it's like, no, at that moment, the minute your eyes snap open and you feel this overwhelm, close some of those tabs in your head. Bring yourself
to
back
to use a
to
computer
reality.
Analogy. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes. I mean, I know we're all guilty of this. We work from computers and phones. How many people have an iPhone and they have to clear out all the things because there's like 500 windows open and it's draining your battery, you know? I mean, we have to do that with our brain. And sometimes that may be something as simple as like grabbing onto your sheet, or you're feeling your fingernail. What does this fingernail feel like? Like, do we feel the ridges in this fingernail? Where does the crease come together between your fingernail and your thumb? Focus on something that you have to completely bring yourself back to reality with. Don't have all those tabs open in your head right away. Just be present in the moment. What do the sheets feel like on my feet? You know, is it cold? Is it hot? What does the fan sound like behind me? Start to close these tabs in your head. That can be a really important part of just getting your day set up without starting it out in panic mode.
Oh my gosh, I love it. And I will say that going through a sequence, a deliberate sequence of exercises has a meditative aspect to it. A pure hardcore meditation person might counter and say, nah, not really. You need to sit there. But when I'm counting through the sequences, that's all I'm thinking about, because I do have to focus on my form. Some of them are, you know, a little challenging, and I'm trying to make big circles with my legs rather than abbreviated ones. And so I'm counting 17, 18, 19, 20, switch sides. And so that's really interesting, because you can easily kind of let your mind wander and get into that overthinking mode. And what would happen sometimes would be, for me, I'd go out there and I'd be playing a podcast at the same time I'm doing my routine. I'm going to multitask. Okay. I'm listening. And then I'd lose count. And my penalty for losing count was I'd have to start over and do the exercise again. So very quickly, I realized that this was a focused engagement where it's not the appropriate time to be. You know, if someone would come out and talk to me, and I couldn't talk to them because, you know, I'm trying to balance on one foot, and it takes a lot of concentration, as it turns out. So you get those meditative benefits, I think, also to whatever it is you're doing. Mm-hmm. And if it's exercise, again, I think it's easier to access kind of that state that you're talking about, where you're feeling the sheets and feeling your fingernail. And now you're feeling your right glute swinging back and forth over your body. It's kind of the mind-body connection getting honed, again, at the very best time, first thing in the morning, before you truly do have important stuff that's, you know, your brain needs to focus on.
Absolutely. And that's where we need to highlight the part of where this routine is not necessarily going through the motions. Someday it may feel that way, but a lot of times people feel obligated to just go through the motions. They're like, okay, well, that one block walk, we're going to do that. And then we're going to do the squats and at the bench, and then we're going to do the dips at the bench. And I went through the motions and now I'm done. But how purposeful are you doing these motions? Like, when you're on your walk, are you taking in the things around you? When you do those squats, are you actually focusing on doing a proper squat? Are we engaging with our body? Are we getting that feedback from it? Where do I feel this? Or are we just going through the motions? Because I think that can also make a big difference in what we're getting out of the thing that we're at, the task that we're doing.
I'm curious about, you've made a few comments over the course of the conversation about stress and balancing, managing stress. You talked about your 4 a.m. workout, which seems like a massively stressful, I mean, talk about prompting stress hormones, just getting up and then going and throwing weight around. So you're having these major bouts of stress, and then having to figure out, of course, you know, that's laudable that you got up that early and performed an awesome workout. And then how are we going to organize the rest of your day so that you don't fall apart? So I'd love to hear more about how that shift has worked for you going to a later workout time. And then in general terms, and maybe even talk about diet, since we chatted about that off recording, how do all these pieces fit together so that those who are motivated and disciplined and want to do good things don't overdo it, which is a big problem these days.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is a great little segue in this conversation, Brad, because you and I both know how our body reacts when we put it under large amounts of stress, and how our performance and how our feelings go. So for me, I mean, my story is, years ago, I over athletically performed and completely burned out, right? And it had major health effects on my body, which then prompted me to start looking into what kind of feedback am I getting from my body when I am overstressing it? And like you said, it could be aches and pains. It could be fatigue. You start noticing all of these things, right? You said you used to get that tiny sore throat, which I've also gotten that. You're like, oh, I'm getting sick, but no, you're not. It's like this little indication that you're overdoing it just a little bit, right? So I went on this quest when I had my giant epiphany, I'll say, my health epiphany crisis. I went on this quest and I really started to reevaluate the stressors and what happens to our body when we're under chronic stress, right? And I could see it with my own body, what was happening. So it put me on this quest to start actually getting my body into a parasympathetic state more often. And in that journey, I noticed a lot about how much exercise can impact it, how much my nutrition can impact it. And so, I mean, everybody knows that you and I, we've done keto, we've done paleo, we try to eat really, really clean, but there are some people that that may not be right from, and there are seasons in our life that that may be right or wrong. And for me personally, as far as training goes, I have a very heavy training load right now. And so maybe a keto or low carb approach isn't good for me right now because it puts my body under a little bit more stress because it's trying to get into ketosis. So we did talk about that a little bit off camera. And I think that we all have to realize when we're implementing a routine, we have to do what's right for us in this current time. And sometimes that would change. So for me, I was living this life where I had this high performing job. I was working all these hours. It was heavily stressful. I no longer do that. I still work a lot of hours, but I work for myself. Things are much better. Now I'm able to take that stress load off. But I know that early morning is not something that I need to do anymore because it stresses my body out worse. And I watch with I have an Aura ring and I watch all of the feedback, right? How do I feel in the afternoon? All of these things. But I think, you know, looking at stress is a big thing. Like, we don't want to turn this routine into something that's crazy stressful. Like you said, to workouts, things like that, that stuff doesn't work.
Wow. Well said. Yeah. And I think I've been listening to this guy, Jay Feldman, Energy Balance podcast recently, with a very compelling message that highlights the idea that fasting, carb restriction, keto, time-restricted feeding, all these centerpieces of the ancestral health movement are, in fact, triggers for stress hormones. They turn on stress hormones, and that's the mechanism by which they work. And I never fully appreciated that enough, because you're mostly focusing on the wonderful health benefits that we get when we're fasting and our body's working more efficiently and we get autophagy, the natural cellular detoxification process gets into high gear when you're fasted. And when you're keto, of course, and you're making these ketones, these wonderful energy molecules that are clean burning in the brain and the body. And all those things are true. And they're wonderful genetically programmed survival mechanisms, but they are indeed stressors and they add to the overall stress scoreboard in your life. And so I'm sitting back and reflecting, going, wait a second, I'm in the older age group. So that is a major stressor when I'm still trying to perform magnificent athletic feats and do crazy sprinting and high jumping workouts. So I might want to devote all my stress hormones to my performance and recovery from physical exercise, knowing that, of course, there are other forms of stress in life, like your car insurance dispute and your credit card statement and this thing and being a parent and, dealing with the elderly. And we all have things that stress us out every day. And mm-hmm. I think we don't also appreciate enough that everything I just mentioned in my little quips, they all go on the same side of the scoreboard. They go on the stress side of the scoreboard. And then on the sleep, recovery, downtime, and restoration side of the scoreboard, a lot of us have very few entries. So Connie sitting on her porch and sipping her coffee, we can put that on the rejuvenation side of the scoreboard. And then we have our evening sleep. And then for many of us, we're getting up and we're going in every direction. We're doing physical exercise. We're doing that hard work. Like you mentioned, you're working your long hours. And then if we're doing these crazy dietary strategies in the name of health, they still go on that same side of the scoreboard. Mm-hmm. And so I've been on an experiment lately for the last 2 months to consume more nutritious calories every day. And I'm going out of my way to wake up and slam a big bowl of fruit and make this amazing super nutrition protein smoothie. I'm coming out with my own protein super fuel product pretty soon. I can't wait to share it with the world, but I make this concoction every single day. And it's a lot of calories, a lot of energy, a lot of good nutrition in there. I put frozen chunks of liver. So I got like my nose to tail going. But the thing is, this is replaced my general tendency, my historic tendency to fast until midday, because that's what I've been writing about in the books and talking about the wonderful benefits, and it'll help you with your body composition and your general overall health. And for many people who don't move enough and eat too much crappy food, yes, fasting is going to be a huge improvement from your shitty buffet breakfast. But in the case of the fit, athletic, energetic population, I think we have to zoom out for a moment and look at this bigger picture of, you know, what is going to serve me best with my unique modern goals. So we're always honoring our ancestors, and our ancestors were able to fast and they didn't eat much food in the winter anyway. And so this is great. This is what happens in the body when you start making ketones, but those people weren't waking up and going into the gym at 4 a.m., let alone 11 a.m. Dr. Tommy Wood, one of the leaders of the ancestral health movement for a long time, he cites research that the modern day elite athlete, so like a CrossFit Games person or a Tour de France cyclist or an Ironman triathlete, does 6 times more physical work, more physical energy expenditure than the busiest hunter-gatherer of all time in human history. Oh, wow. 6 times more. So, you know, Matthew Frazier, whatever, turn on YouTube and watch Matthew Frazier winning the CrossFit Games. There was no dude ever lifting that many stones and building that many huts in a single day of what he does routinely every single day. Or the great triathlete, Christian Blumenfeld, this guy from Norway, is a sensation. And he's like won the Olympic gold medal, won the Ironman World Championship. Oh my gosh. And he reportedly trains 8 hours a day and he's just a machine. So the modern human, I don't think those two aforementioned people are doing a lot of keto and fasting and carb restriction. I think Matthew Frazier on a recent interview was talking about how he had Snicker bars in between his sets so that he could, you know, keep going, which maybe there's a better choice than Snicker bars. But the point is well taken that these people are fueling themselves appropriately to do high energy expenditure, high stress athletic training programs.
Absolutely. And I liked how you called it the scoreboard. That's a way better way to phrase it. I always call it the stress bucket. I'm like, how much stress can you put in? Whether it's good stress or bad stress, it all fills the bucket. So how much are we putting in there? And I love how you called it a scoreboard, because now we have scores for the rejuvenation team and scores for the stress team. And we don't really want the stress team winning every single day.
Yeah. And in the example of diet and the experiment I mentioned, now, because I'm, you know, fueling myself appropriately, let's say first thing in the morning before I start my stressful day, and I'll make air quotes for that word stressful, because we generally use that term to confer a negative stimulation. But the true definition of stress, Hans Selye, the father of modern stress research, widely touted, you can read all about him and his work. He was the first one that characterized stress as stimulus. And so it's any form of stimulus. You can see those talk about scoreboards. You can Google like the stress scoreboard of life, and they put you know, the worst thing is, you know, death of a loved one, and then up there highly ranked is getting married. So your wedding day is one of the most stressful experiences you will ever have. But it's just ideally, I mean, it could be stressful actually, but ideally it's because of the incredible stimulation of throwing this big party, being the subject of all the attention and the excitement. And yeah, it's very, very stressful, but in a good way. And so we have these things that we enjoy that are positive stressors. And then we have negative stressors like the traffic jam that we had to endure before we got to the gym to do our positive stressor. But again, if you think of it in a bigger picture, and now I'm you know, injecting diet back into this conversation, if I can refuel appropriately before and after workouts and choose exclusively nutritious foods, because talk about a stressor when you're throwing down junk food on top of and the athletes are very guilty of this, where they feel like they have a free pass in their back pocket to go and chow down. I just saw a video of, it was an Adidas promo video of two of the greatest track and field athletes in the world, Noah Lyles, world champion, 200 meters, Wade Van Niekerk, world record holder in the 400 meters. And they were doing kind of a cameo of them, you know, in their personal lives. And they stopped for freaking donuts. And my heart broke. It's like, here are the two of the greatest athletic specimens on the planet. And they have the urge to stop for a donut. Okay, they're burning a lot of calories, and that's going into a very hot furnace. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, when we eat these foods that are difficult to metabolize and convert into energy, that's when we come into problems. And when we eat exclusively nutritious foods, Dr. Robert Lustig says this, one of the great researchers, author of Metabolical and many other best-selling books. He says, if you exclusively consume nutritious, wholesome foods and eliminate processed foods, it is almost impossible to get fat. This is from the world's leading researcher on this stuff. And that was a real mind blower. Mm-hmm. But now you sit back and you think about it. Look, have you ever overeaten on those ribeye steaks to the point where, oh my gosh, I had four, I should have only had three. And now I'm getting fat on steak, eggs, salmon, fresh fruit. You know, it doesn't happen because we have great satiety signals and hormones that regulate our hunger and our caloric intake appropriately when we're consuming wholesome, nutritious foods.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love that. I try to make a point of explaining that often. Like people get in this mindset, especially with this macro counting mindset that's going on right now. They get in this mindset, well, a carb is a carb. Well, a carb really isn't a carb because white sugar has zero nutrient benefits, zero. Like it's a carb. Yeah, it can make energy, but zero. Okay. Or you compare that to a piece of pineapple that's going to have a bunch of micronutrients in it, you know, vitamins, minerals, all these things. It's different. Yes, they are a carb, but what is going to fuel your body better? What has nutrient density?
At first I thought you said a car is a car. And then I realized, what a great analogy, because if you think a car is a car, then I'll trade you my 98 Toyota Tacoma backup car. I'll trade you that for your brand new Tesla. If you think a car is a car.
Yes.
And it's just as ridiculous as saying a carb is a carb. And with that example of processed sugar, you could cause some gut disturbances. There's this phenomenon called the production of endotoxin, that's internally manufactured toxin when you're consuming difficult to digest foods like processed sugar. And the endotoxin interferes with healthy mitochondrial function and healthy fat metabolism. So when you're slamming sugar, you are interfering with your body's ability to burn energy naturally, like especially body fat. And therefore, that's how you get fat, from eating junk food versus, let's say, the same number of calories of eating nutritious foods. So these are all real eye openers where I think we've become fixated, like you say, on the macros and on the unique strategies and the nuances of how do I, track my ketone production and look at my blood values to see if I'm healthy or not. And boy, we all can just take a few steps back, resolve to eliminate all manner of processed and nutrient deficient foods and focus on nutrient dense foods, not worry about the amount of calories or any of that stuff that's been proven to be ineffective anyway, in terms of cutting back on your calories and adding to your workout energy expenditure. Your body has an assortment of ways to compensate. And this is called the constrained model of energy expenditure, where if you really train yourself to the extreme in the gym, and then you're also fooling around with carb restriction or calorie restriction, your body is going to turn down an assortment of really, really important dials. The quote, I think it's from Ponser, says, reproduction, repair, growth, and locomotion are a zero-sum game. If you borrow a lot heavily or you apply heavily in one of those, you're going to borrow from the others. And when I say locomotion, that's all catch-all for all kinds of working out, whatever fitness endeavors you're doing, locomotion, moving, burning the body. And so you're going to turn down those other dials. And the most extreme, obvious example of this is the wide prevalence of amenorrhea, the cessation of menstruation, among elite female athletes whose body fat gets down below that threshold where they are no longer fertile. Mm-hmm. They stop menstruating due to the extreme energy expenditure of their workouts. And that is, I want to find someone who can argue that that's healthy, because that is the most profound example of the extreme unhealthiness of, excess energy devoted to exercise.
Absolutely. And we see this in a lot of things. I think you've been diving into some hormone stuff lately yourself. We see this with these things. Okay. So we'll go back to the stress a little bit here, but even in our healthy hormone production, it all starts with cholesterol, but essentially we can only go one of two ways. We can make cortisol, or we can make our sexual hormones and our reproductive hormones. And when we are constantly releasing cortisol and prioritizing cortisol, we immediately see a decline in our sex hormones anyway. You add dieting and stuff, that's another stress. Another big thing that we see is like the thyroid will downregulate because it doesn't want to burn any more energy than it's already burning. It feels like we're in trouble, you know? So there are a lot of these metabolic processes that begin to downregulate, because including females and their menstrual cycle, because they're like, no, we don't have the energy to put into this.
Yeah, well said. There's also this these terms bantered about, like adrenal fatigue or adrenal burnout. And I was talking to Dr. Kate Shanahan about this years ago, because I was suffering from it myself. I was not recovering well from workouts and just was feeling like crap. And obviously it was from too much stress. And she goes, oh, by the way, there's nothing wrong with your adrenal glands. And almost 99.5% of the people that have adrenal fatigue have nothing wrong with the endocrine system. Unfortunately, they'll go get medical treatment, and who knows what they're going to do. They give you a medication or something. But it's just the abuse of the endocrine system from excess fight or flight stimulation. In my case, it was, overtraining. So I think that's a nice one to kind of step back from this paradigm of always trying to diagnose something as a disease, and it's your unique body that has a bad adrenal gland, and it's by and large not true. Same with thyroid, and people are, taking medications and dealing with it where there's an opportunity to optimize lifestyle. I'm really interested in testosterone. I do a lot of posts about that, and I'm looking for ways. I'm researching a book right now for, ways to optimize testosterone naturally, and also with amusement listening to the experts in testosterone replacement therapy, which works extremely well, right? They bust athletes for steroids who are setting world records and playing in the NFL and the major leagues. It works to override your own metabolic and hormonal function, but it seems like a ridiculous option that would, maybe be a last resort if you're doing everything right and you're however old, 70, and your numbers are still bad. But there's so much potential for optimization. And guess what? If you go into hormone replacement as an unhealthy person, you are going to engage this phenomenon of aromatization. And that's where the supplemental testosterone that you take from the injection or the patch or the cream will be converted into estrogen, because it's going into a body plagued by systemic inflammation. And that's what the visceral fat reveals a condition of systemic inflammation. And when you have visceral fat, when you have that spare tire, you are highly prone to aromatization of the natural hormones or the supplemental hormones. So it's like, hey, don't do testosterone replacement therapy if you're unhealthy. And B, if you're healthy, you don't need it, or you won't need it if you continue to tweak and try to optimize.
I love that. That's a huge thing I preach with the people that I work with. Is I just, as an example, I had a woman come to me that was working with a coach that was touted for weight loss. They had her on 1,000-calorie diet for quite some time. And she came to me, we ran labs, and her thyroid was just totally in the toilet. And she's like, well, do I need to reach out to my healthcare provider in order to get on medications? And I was like, well, that is certainly your choice. At this point, I think it would be wise to start with Obviously, we're going to feed you more nutritious food. We're going to get food up there. We're going to remove some stress for your, you know, in your lifestyle, may do some supplementation for the time with some things that are going to support your nutrients that will support your thyroid, and then see what happens with your thyroid before, you know, taking the next step. I said, because the hard part is we're so in a hurry to jump on a medication to fix something. Mm. And then oftentimes we're stuck on that thing for a lifetime because now we like you said, you're adding to that. You're stuck. You're now, you've done it, you're there, and it's much harder to repair than just starting with the basics. Like, what do we need? We need to remove stress. Clearly we're not eating enough. We see that reverse T3 is way up there. Like, we haven't had enough food. And that's a whole nother conversation, obviously, but I'm actually doing a lab work class here coming up and teaching people how to understand their own labs and what to ask for from their doctor, because it's such a hard thing, right? But anyway, you can see this feedback from our body when you look at it, especially with labs. You can see this feedback and you're able to optimize and you're able to be like, hey, well, maybe you're missing the mark right here. And maybe this is what needs to change as a lifestyle factor rather than just throwing a medication at it.
Oh, love it. I'm in for that class. Read your own labs.
Yeah.
And you know, guess what? You're not dispensing medical advice. And if you see some weird number, talk to your doctor. But at first, yeah, there's so much more. And people asking me like, where'd you get these labs? I'm like, I go on the internet and I buy them. Come on, wake up. You know,
yeah.
Like, my friends are like, did you go to the doctor? Did they order that? No. You can bypass that now, which is so good. And I can test, you know, they have specials. It's kind of ridiculous how, you know, everything's come down from all the traditionalism of the past, but like there's a testosterone special at Ultra Lab Test, only $34. I'm like, I'm in, I'll buy that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. I preach that all the time. I'm like, I get online and I'm like, dude, the lab tests are on sale right now. Order them. Now that being said, since we dove down this little rabbit hole here, there is a big difference between within reference interval and optimal. And we need to keep that in mind. So if you're one person that just heard this conversation, you're like, oh, I'm going to go order my own labs. Keep in mind, our current medical state is really poor and those reference ranges are not optimal. So what may be considered medically a problem when it gets to this particular range may not be where you actually want to be. You may want to be in a much different number that's going to make you feel optimized and energetic.
Oh my gosh. Well said. And here's a funny one with male serum testosterone range. You know what they've done recently? They have adjusted the range downward, the normal range.
Yeah.
The reason they did this, it happened in 2017 and now widely adopted with a different normal range, is because the global prevalence of obesity has increased so much. And of course, obesity tanks testosterone. Mm-hmm. So there's so much of the population that's in the low side that they had to kind of just move that scale back so that you could be considered more people normal. And so when you're talking about that's a simple example of wanting, in the case of testosterone, I want as much as possible in my body. There's no downside to, you know, trying to rise up the scale. And I was patting myself on the back recently. I wrote a post showing that my testosterone was in the 99th percentile, even for a young person. And then I realized, wait a second, you know, that should be considered normal. And so my perspective, I mean, it's nice. I'm happy about it that it's high, but that's my normal. And when it drops to, you know, the highly laudable 75% range, I'm going to take a look and say, wow, maybe I've been doing too much exercise or something. So if we can recalibrate to realize that normal is so pathetic in today's average citizen that we want to aspire to be exceptional just so we can be normal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. I actually think I don't have any male lab ranges in front of me right now, but I actually think the current acceptable amount is 200 for a male. And that is so not okay. That is like times three, not okay. Like more than that, you know? So I try to tell people that I have people tell me all the time, they're like, well, I came back normal. And I'm like, you don't want to be normal in this current society. You are not going to feel good. Do you want to be normal or do you want to be optimal? I personally want to be optimal. I want to drive your Tesla, Brad. I don't want to be in the Toyota pickup.
Yeah, I traded somebody. Who knew?
Yeah, I mean, it's normal to drive a Toyota pickup, but I would be happy with the Tesla. So yeah. Anyway, wrapping up this conversation, it's been a great one. If there was anything you wanted to get out there, what would it be to my listeners today?
I would say get started on this morning routine. And all I'm asking for is 5 minutes. It has changed my own life, even as a lifelong athlete, extreme fitness enthusiast. This is a whole nother category where I've become a more focused, disciplined, consistent person. And I'm seeing this ooze in. I'm not saying I'm perfect, but it's hopefully oozing into my work life and my discipline in many other ways, with my emotions and my use of the screen and my use of social media and divergences like that. High jump videos on YouTube, they happen to click on all throughout the day. But now, because I'm setting myself up for success, and guess what? I might be still wasting time scrolling with my mobile device, but not during the first 40 minutes of the day. So at least I got that going for me. And I think you can all start with a conservative way. And if you want to check out my course, you can look at bradkearns.com. We'll put a link in the show notes. Any listener or friend of Connie is going to get 10% off, because I appreciate what you're doing. So the code is Brad10. That's pretty easy. And so if you want to enroll, you can use that code. And we are off and running. There's a lot of fun content in there that'll get you motivated and inspired to custom design. Again, you don't have to follow me and what I'm doing, but you can pick 3 of the 33 exercises that I do, or 7 of them, or 12, or whatever, and go to town with your own custom way to start the day. Can't beat it.
All right. Well, Brad, it's been a pleasure. I'm super excited that you joined me today. And I will make sure to put all that information in the show notes too, so listeners can go click on that and go find you and get started with their own morning routine. Well, thanks for tuning in. For further information about me and my programs, as well as free recipes and other health tips, please visit www.ConnieNightingale.com or find me on Instagram at ConnieBegani. I want to remind you that any opinions or views expressed in this podcast are their own, and that they are not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any illness or condition. This show is not intended to replace your regular health care. Please consult with your current primary care provider before changing any of your diet, exercise, or medical protocols. Thanks so much for tuning in. See you next time.